Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 211. I want to thank each of you guys for listening each week. I really appreciate those of you that leave ratings and reviews on iTunes. That helps us just spread the word. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically VersaPulley for sponsoring this episode. Wouldn't be able to do this without them, and I only partner with companies that I believe in and trust. This week I'm joined by Tommy Christian. Tommy and I met out at the Speed Mastermind. I've known of him for quite a while. We finally got a chance to meet out there, and he's the director of training for TC Boost Sports Performance in Chicago, a former Wildcat linebacker and assistant strength coach there, and just was really just enjoyed our conversation out there and wanted to have him on the show, man. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
Tommy, you know, I told you a little bit about – I talked a little bit about your playing experience you know, the coaching experience, and obviously you've gone pretty much into business for yourself almost right away. But, you know, what was the reason that you chose strength and conditioning in the first place?
Yeah, really, it's all about, for me, the impact that my college strength and conditioning coach had on my life, you know. And I always thought, you know, ultimately my goal is not to make money for some company, but, you know, I'd love to make a difference in people's lives. And, you know, I kind of had a circuitous route because I was a mechanical engineer at Northwestern, you know, started out in the automotive industry. And then, you know, after almost 5 years, kind of took a leap of faith and, you know, wound up getting an unpaid internship, you know, and really the goal was to make an impact, you know, and really result of, you know, like most of us in coaching, you know, we had coaches when we were athletes that made a difference in our lives. And that was really what vaulted me from engineering into coaching.
Who was that? I mean, who was that coach and what specifically did they do?
Larry Lilja, yeah. Who was the original strength and conditioning coach for Northwestern University. And he was there for many, many years and just a fantastic guy. And, you know, I think the thing about Larry was, you know, he loved us. You know, he would do everything for us. He'd hold us accountable. He'd push us. You know, he wasn't a softy, but you know, everybody knew that he cared about you, and you know, and he did everything he could. He wasn't a guy who just regurgitated the same things every year. You know, he was always working to, you know, to try different things, you know, and to really work to progress what he was doing. And you know, told great stories. He was a great motivator, was a big part of our chapels when I was playing there too, and just a man of faith too, which I really appreciated. But you know, Larry's just was a mentor, you know, and a great impactor of a bunch of young lives, you know, including me.
Yeah, I think that's you know, that's the thing that we sometimes take for granted is the fact that we get the opportunity each and every day to impact people's lives, not just our athletes, but the people that surround our athletes. And you know, and it's incredible. I mean, you're talking mechanical engineering and you go out and into that industry and it gets to a point where it's like, you know what? It's not what my passion is. It's not what I love to do. And,
right.
And when searching and for what that is, you know, you're drawn to this person that had an impact in your life. And I think that's, you know, the old adage is, you know, a coach touches more people in one day than most people do in their entire life. And I do, I believe that, you know, through, you know, several degrees of separation, but that's important. I think, you know, one thing that you mentioned there that, you know, something that is keen that I'm keen on right now because I'm working on my second book and it's kind of it's a book on that storytelling. And sometimes we forget the importance of using stories to convey messages, you know?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I'm working on a book where coaches are contributing stories that they use with their athletes. But, you know, is that something that you use with your athletes now?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, I think one of the values of, you know, and what we look for in terms of our coaches is we want coaches that actually played and performed, you know, ideally at a higher level where they've been able to cultivate experiences where they have stories, you know, because we face athletes that go through adversity. And, you know, I think one of the reasons we go through adversity is so that we can then kind of share what helped us to get through that, you know, and it is like, yeah, the power of, you know, you know, to lecture on some theory is very different than to say, hey, let me tell you about my life. Let me tell you about, you know, what helped me when, you know, I was struggling to, you know, to crack the starting lineup, or I kept having setbacks with nagging injuries, and this is how I approached it. So, yeah, I mean, I think stories are, you know, fantastic. And I think it's a gift if you're a good storyteller and a coach.
I couldn't agree with you more. Well, good jumping in from mechanical engineering to strength and conditioning, even though as a player you experienced it, coaching, it's a completely different deal. I'm sure you made lots of mistakes. You know, what's one of the biggest mistakes you made, and kind of how you learned from it?
You know, I think, you know, I was thinking about that question. You know, I think the area, I think early on is just, is not really thinking in terms of, you know, progression. I think I would just tend to say, well, this is what I want, and I just would jump right to the end thing, you know, right. And especially, you know, as a, you know, as a, somebody who spent most of my career focused on the speed development side of what we do, you know, I think it's really thinking about, like, what is that very specific movement that a linebacker goes through, or a center, you know, or a defensive back, and just starting right there, and then kind of running out of progressions, you know, as we go through the off season. I'm like, you know, how do we keep this from being stale? And I, you know, say that's something that I think early on I would go right to the thing that I thought would have the most transferability to the field. And I've been challenged to, you know, really back that back and really think through the progressions and what are kind of the foundational components to create what we want in terms of movement at the end.
Yeah, I think that's I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think that's something that, especially young coaches that are listening, you know, you want to find kind of a base group of exercises that you program, you run your program off of. And then from that, you need to have those regressions and progressions, you know, and having it both ways, because, you know, I mean, squat, that's a base exercise for me. But some, you know, I've had athletes come in that absolutely couldn't squat for their life, you know, and so having something to go to is important. So if you're a young coach, you know, when you go and you visit a Tommy Christian, or you go and you visit any strength coach out there, asking them what those base exercises are and then what their progressions or regressions, that could be a very powerful exercise for you to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're known, you know, in the industry as somebody that develops speed and do it at a high level. You know, what are some of the common mistakes that you see when athletes come to you? What are some things that they are quick fixes, or, you know, or things that, you know, that we need to be doing a better job of, maybe in the school setting?
Yeah, I mean, I think an area where I see a lot in terms of what athletes are learning is when we train guys for the combine and NFL draft every year, and I just finished my 17th year of doing that. You know, so we'll get athletes that come in, and they've been, you know, all over the country, you know, different programs, you know, from, you know, prominent programs like USC and Notre Dame, Nebraska, to small schools. And it's always interesting for me to ask kind of find out what have they done so far? You know, what's their experience like at that point? And, you know, and I think it's getting a lot better recent years, you know, but I think early on, a lot of them, you know, would come out of that setting and they had not really been coached in the mechanics of how to run well. They, you know, they always say, well, nobody's ever taught me how to start, how to accelerate, you know, how to run at top speed. And it's always really been baffling to me, because it's such a foundational part of being a good athlete is to be able to move well, you know, and sure. It's the same in agility as well. And so, you know, and I think it's hard sometimes in, you know, in the college setting. I was in it early on, and I think it's, you know, when I was at Northwestern, there was only three of us that served the entire athletic department, you know, and so we were just limited in what we could actually accomplish. But I think, you know, first off is being actually coached in how to move and how to run, you know, and then I think the quick fix, you know, so often when, you know, acceleration is so important, you know, and I always say, like, the best athletes are the ones that win the 1 yard race in 360 degrees, you know, like, that's the most important thing in sport, you know, that burst, that change of direction, that initial separation. And it's all about applying force into the ground, you know, and I think what athletes do so often is they think if I'm going to run faster, I have to take faster steps. And they really emphasize that quickness, and they don't really use power, you know, and they work hard and they develop, you know, really, you know, maybe fantastic numbers in the weight room in terms of their cleans and their snatches. And then they don't actually use that force that they're capable of generating, because in their mind, their motor pattern is fast steps, fast steps, fast steps. And so really getting them to focus on full pushes, you know, gaining ground. We always say, you know, we want you to, like, imagine, like, if you're running stadium stairs, you're trying to take three stairs at a time, you know, where you're going to get a powerful full push. You're going to really have to drive your knees so you don't trip on that next step. But usually we see progress there, because most athletes don't actually do that well. And, you know, we do a lot of film analysis, and we'll kind of show them, like, you know, here's your first three steps. You know, here's where you're at 5 yards. You know, this is what we're trying to get to. And it's helpful to show, you know, images of, you know, Asafa Powell, Usain Bolt, you know, so sure. You know, say like, hey, these are guys where, you know, speed is their sport. Right. You know, this is what they work on, and this is how they run. And there's a reason why, you know, and that process wasn't natural. You know, we always say, like, you know, when we used to work with the redshirted guys at Northwestern, we kind of talked to them about speed, and we'd bring them in the team room, show them videos, and I'd show them Olympic finals. And I'll say, right. You know, what do you see in common with all of these guys? You know, and they're like, well, they all run great. Like, they look great running. You know, I'm like, do you think that was natural?
Right.
Well, they were naturally fast. If you're an Olympian, they certainly were probably the fastest kid around.
Sure.
But they had to work on that skill of running that way. And, you know, and I mean, if you're spending, you know, how many hours you spend catching balls or, you know, shooting basketballs, you know, how much time you spend on your skill of taking a great first step in acceleration. So.
Well, I agree with that 100%. When you made that jump, I mean, obviously being in the team setting, you know, you probably didn't have the same knowledge, you know, of how to move well as you do now. What were some of those first steps that you took to really understand movement?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, number one is just watching, being observant, you know. And I think as a, you know, my background as a mechanical engineer, you know, has helped me to really, you know, think maybe a little bit more analytically,
sure.
or more bent that way. And so I'm looking at, you know, how do we apply force? You know, what are the angles most, you know, advantageous, you know, so like really looking at movement just outside the box, more as the body as kind of a system of levers, you know, and then early on, you know, having, you know, when I was at Northwestern, I was able to, you know, meet with some people, and Northwestern was able to, you know, fly me around, and I got to go down. My brother was playing for the Atlanta Falcons, and Lauren Seagraves was running their speed program with Al Miller. This was like, you know, late 90s, early 2000, and got to spend a little time with them, you know, went and spent time with Chip Smith early on. And, you know, and then I had an entire team of guys, you know, as a young strength coach, where I got to put together my plan and run it, execute it, and kind of see what worked, what didn't, timing guys before and after, and, you know, gradually kind of progressing that. But I think having those influences, you know, but then using your own reason, and, you know, and I think for me, you know, I would learn stuff, and I would just do it at first, just thinking, well, I trust this person and they do it. But then I'm like, I have to understand it, you know, and it has to make sense to me, because I'm going to be more effective as a coach if I can, you know, really show an athlete why we're doing what we're doing. How's it going to help? You know, I have to understand it. And if I can't have the why of what's in a program, then I won't put it in it, you know. But where early on as a coach, I didn't know much. I just had to trust it and do it. And then as I learned, I'm like, well, that doesn't really make sense. You know, that doesn't make sense because of these articles that I've read or this research, or, you know, and then I'm like, well, let's change that. 'Cause maybe they got better in spite of that part of my program and not because of it, you know.
I'm glad you said that. I think that's so true with what, you know, as coaches, I mean, that's all we can do, is that we are a culmination of our experiences and our education up to that point. Where most people stop is that they identify with a certain program or a certain system, and then that they block out the continually challenging that, you know. And I think that's something that you've done naturally, where, you've watched, you've learned, you've tried, then you turn around and you start that process back all over again, and
Right.
I think that that's a common thread with the successful coaches is that you're a lifelong learner and you're constantly challenging your ideals to make sure that they're most current.
Yeah, absolutely.
You did, one of the challenges with being in a team setting, like you mentioned with, Northwestern, where you're three guys and you have the entire athletic department, is that you're often coaching speed in a group setting,
Right.
What are some of the tactics that you've used to kind of, to coach a big group?
Yeah. I mean, well, one thing, when I was working with Northwestern is I would get the film crew to come out and have them film, and have them film acceleration, have them film top speed, have them film, different areas and then would have time to, let the players know that their film is up, and I would encourage them to, review it on their own if we didn't have the time to review it. And then we would do these sort of chalk talks before we did our speed session. So we'd go in on a grease board and we talk about, using stick figures and saying, this is what we're looking for. And,
right.
How are you ever going to move well if you don't know what ideal should look like? So I always say like an athlete, and always coaching them in that group setting, asking them questions,
right.
What should you feel? What should this look like? Did your teammate do that well or not? What would you coach? How would you coach them? So if you know what it looks like, that's one step, and then the next step is like, and that's a lot of kind of the drills that, we've worked to develop or learn from other coaches is drills that really give you the kinesthetic feel of what it feels like to do it right,
right.
Where you have that feedback, while you're doing it. It's great to look at video, but that's kind of after the fact. But if you can tune in to, what it feels like while you're doing it, you can actually correct on the fly. And so getting them to understand what it should look like, in the chalk talks, and they can go look at their film, but then doing things where they can feel what it feels like to take a great, first step. What should it feel like in acceleration, And,
right.
and that's, but then also in that team setting, when we would do acceleration work, we'd have them run, maybe, five guys at a time.
Right.
They can do the waterfall start in that where you can get your eyes on each guy. And then as they're coming back, they need recovery anyway. If you're doing high quality speed work, you can't go every 30 seconds and think that they're getting faster,
Right.
And so in that recovery time, we would always go, and like if I was running that station, I would be walking back with the athletes and say, hey, John, you're breaking at your hips. You need to really, don't think of getting your head and shoulders down. Think of getting body lean, through your ankles, and let's have that straight line of force through your body. And, you could pick out really like, it's kind of like you pick out the low hanging fruit in that large group setting, and you
right.
kind of see guys that are really bad. You start hitting them, and then you're hitting everybody else with maybe more general things, and you can kind of usually put guys in buckets, of, these guys are, butt kickers in acceleration, or these guys are like short steppers, or like, top speed, this guy really sinks, and he needs
right.
to work on hip height and, running across the top of the ground, not sinking into it. And, so I think always throwing out kind of more general cues, and then look for the, in that group setting, you'll see the guys that look really bad.
Sure.
Hit them first, and if you can use your film crew, that's a creative way. And you're always limited the college setting with NCAA time requirements, but they can do film work on their own. And,
yeah.
and I think athletes understand that if I can move better, if I can be faster, I'm going to be a better player. I'm going to have a chance to help my team win. In football, if you're college, you're working with college athletes, they probably would like to play professionally,
Right. Sure.
And they know like, hey, I better be a great athlete. I mean, there's a lot of big, strong guys that
right.
don't play in the NFL.
That's
you know,
right.
It's the big, strong, powerful, athletic guys that play on Sundays and make a lot of money and get to, extend their careers. And so I think, at the college level, they're bought into, hey, if this
yeah.
can make me faster and move better, I want to do it. I want to learn it. I'll do extra time. So I find it's pretty easy to motivate them.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Where, you know, it's kind of like buys and tries. I mean, the athletes are going to do buys and tries because they want to look good. So it's not necessarily something that you have to program in, even though you should. On some degree, it's something that, you know, if left to their own devices, they're going to do that. If you tell them that this is going to get them faster, then they're going to do it just because it's they know that it applies directly to them being a great athlete. I think things that you said there that were really good to pull out were, you know, you got to define good. They have to see what good looks like so they really understand what that is. And then making sure that you're visually, auditorily, and kinesthetically making them, you know, they're going to see all three because, you know, every athlete learns in different ways.
Right.
And it's really the combination of, you know, see, tell, and feel that really kind of drives the message home. So
absolutely.
I agree with that. I want to switch gears just a little bit. I mean, you're running a successful business in a highly competitive city there. You know, there's a lot of coaches that you know, that are in that space that listen. What are three things that you did kind of early in your business, early in your career to kind of drive traffic in the door, you know, to buy into you?
Yeah. As I look back on it, Ron, I'm like, I'm amazed. You know, I really think, like, by God's grace, I'm doing what I'm doing, you know, and I've made so many mistakes, you know, but I think if I look back and say, what were the things I did right? And most of it was kind of unintentional early on, although I think really driven by a desire to build relationships was something that I was intentional about, you know, and it really came from the heart of why I wanted to be a coach. And, you know, and early on when I was an engineer and I thought, man, you know, this was like 1999. And I thought, man, if I had known what I learned as a college athlete and what my brother was getting in the NFL when I was in high school, it would have made a huge impact on my, you know, my career. And who knows, you know, what I could have done as an athlete if I had great training and coaching at a high school level. And so I, you know, I had this idea, and sports performance wasn't even a word back then, you know, strength and conditioning. You know, you either worked out at Bally's if you're in high school, or maybe you had a high school weight room. I mean, a lot of places didn't even have weight rooms back then, you know, late 80s. And so I called my high school coach, and I had this great idea about, you know, starting this, you know, training company that would work with high school athletes and, you know, give them the kind of training that college and pro athletes have and really make this impact. Like, coach, what do you think? And he says, I don't like it. What? It's a great idea. This is my dream, you know? And and he said, well, I don't want you to take players away from me. I don't want you to take my players away from my program. Right. You know, and it really like made me think. And I'm like, I need to be all about complementing and finding ways to add value to what high school coaches are doing, you know? And so early on, you know, and most time, you know, 9 out of 10 times they wouldn't answer calls and wouldn't return emails, you know, but, with persistence, I was able to build relationships with high school coaches and show them value. And, you know, in those relationships really seek to offer, like, you know, larger group setting, like, you know, speed camps at their school, offering demos, clinics, just ways to earn their trust and help their team kind of in the setting that they were at, you know. And so early on, I didn't have a facility, you know, and when you have a business, you know, if you take on a large rent or mortgage and you hire a bunch of coaches, like, you'll go bankrupt very quick. You know, you can't last too many months. And so I think for me to start small in terms of those big expenses and really focus on building relationships, building a network of coaches that know about you and trust you, and then, you know, working to do camps, you know, and working to like do stuff at the high schools, you know, that was really what I was doing. And, you know, in that time I was also contracted by Northwestern. I was running all of their speed development work, which was, you know, helped to subsidize cash flow, and it was a great experience, really rewarding for me to grow in that setting as well. And so I think that's one thing is, you know, if you can do it without a facility at first, I think that's a smart move, and try to grow some network of coaches and athletes that know you and trust you. And then, you know, I think, I really think for me, it was like the three things of building relationships with coaches, focusing on that team and camp setting, and then being patient about the building that I think helped me to start out, you know. And then also early on, I think I said yes to everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I almost think you, you know, now I'm a lot more intentional, you know, but I think early on, I think that probably helped me, you know, because I got a chance to be in a lot of different environments. You know, I got a chance to meet a lot of different people, and it helped me to, I think, define later on more what I really wanted to focus on, you know. And then as a business, you know, as a businessman, you know, which is not what I got into this for, but I have to wear that hat a lot. Right. You know, I need to be intentional. I need to say, you know, just like athletes, you know, we have goals of what we want, and they're measurable. You know, as a business, we have goals, and you have to have a plan for how you want to get to where you want to go, and you have to make tough decisions at times. So,
yeah, I think that's the thing that a lot of coaches don't realize, is that when you do get into that world, you have to be both a businessman and a strength coach, you know, and a speed coach.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people fail, because they haven't developed that skill set, you know.
Right.
But it's not atypical of what you have to do on a daily basis as a strength coach. You're always having to sell your program.
Absolutely.
Always having to create buy-in and build relationships.
Yeah.
You know, so it's stuff that transfers. You just got to use it in the right way. But
exactly.
Well, man, I appreciate all this. I want to end the show with some resources. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
You know, really, it was from my brother, you know, who's been, you know, he was a better athlete than I was. He played 11 years in the NFL, you know, and was, you know, kind of paved a road ahead of me.
Right.
I wouldn't have been a college athlete if it wouldn't have been for his, you know, just example, you know, in my life. But, you know, from him, I think really just the encouragement to say, you know, if you want to coach people well and you want them to respond to you, they need to know that you care about them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that it's got to come from that place, you know. And if you know a coach really cares about you, loves you, wants to invest in you, then as an athlete, you don't want to let that coach down, you know. And it's really like, instead of a fear of punishment, you know, which we have to hold athletes accountable, and there's a place for that. You know, but really, if athletes know that you care about them, that you invest in them, and that you love them, that's why you're there. They don't want to let you down,
right.
You know, and it's not 100%. There's some athletes that, you know, could care
yeah,
less.
Sure.
You know, you may have to have a different approach, but most people, if they know that their coach cares about them deeply and really is invested in seeing them succeed, they don't want to let you down. And I think, you know, as my sort of motivation in like why I'm doing what I'm doing, I want to make that impact, you know.
Yeah.
I want to show them that I care. And, you know, my means are, you know, sports performance, and my specific means are, you know, the speed development side of that. But ultimately, like, I want to impact lives in a positive way.
Yeah.
No. Kind of having that at the forefront.
Well, that's absolutely the right reason. And that's why you've been successful, for sure. What about I see a book full bookshelf full of books there. What, give us a book that you recommend.
Yeah.
And give me an app and a website as well.
Okay, great. There's an author I came across named Rory Vaden, and a book called Take the Stairs. And it's fantastic. And it's really about, you know, just principles of being successful in life, you know, and it applies very much to running a business. It applies very much to being a student. It applies to being an athlete, you know, and it's just fantastic book. It, you know, I read it this past fall. It has another book called Procrastinate on Purpose.
Yeah.
It's also fantastic, but just really great. You know, and it just talks about, like, you know, we live in an escalator, you know, world where everybody wants the easy way to the top, and that there really is not an easy path, but with self-discipline and hard work, you can almost guarantee success if you don't quit, you know. And it's really, you know, there's just a lot of great stuff in that book. I'd highly recommend it. And, you know, as a website, you know, I love Elite Track. You know, I've gone on there, you know, quite a bit over the years. Mike Young is fantastic as a you know, sports biomechanist, you know, and really great on learning about, you know, the mechanics of speed and movement. And then the app we use all the time in our facility, Dartfish Express, you know, it's a bargain, and it's a very useful tool in, you know, doing film analysis on the fly and having it on the phone and the iPads. really helps with, you know, helping athletes to see really that image of what they look like and how it compares to what we want them to get to. And we use it all the time. And it, I think it's about $7. So it's
That's awesome. Well, that's a book that I saw that you put that down. That's, I've never read that, and I can't wait to read it.
It's fantastic. I would recommend the other one as well. They're very, very good. You'll get a lot out of it, and it'll apply to coaching. Applies to, you know, being a dad, being a husband, you know, being a businessman.
Sure.
Really, all of life. It's great.
Well, like you said earlier, I said multiple times through this episode, I mean, it's easy to see why you've been a success. I mean, I obviously have the right reasons, the right motivations behind, you know, the reason why you do what you do. And then, you know, the execution is what you just said. I mean, it's discipline and hard work and being relentless about it. And you've done that throughout. So really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody, man.
Thanks, Rod. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.